That Great Business Show. Winner, highly commended award, Irish Podcast Awards.
Welcome to episode 186 of That Great Business Show, home of great business tips, insights, and opportunities on every episode. Delivered in our commute-friendly package or on board Aer Lingus long haul, where we are their podcast partners. And boy, on this episode, do we have some goodies for you. Unlock the full potential of your business with Mentors Work, Ireland's award-winning, fully government-funded mentoring program designed to fuel the growth of your business, no matter the sector or size. Mentors Work will help transform your business by providing tailored guidance through one-on-one mentoring sessions, upskilling workshops, as well as networking opportunities. Together with your mentor, you'll also craft a customized six-month business plan to propel your business forward. Try it and test it, and already empowering over 3,000 Irish businesses, register for free today on mentorswork.ie. I'm Conal O'Mora in Foltestier. He got knocked down, but he got up again. An e-commerce wizard launches his big pivot this week. And if your sure thing horse let you down at Cheltenham due to injury, we found a business that is using AI to make sure that doesn't happen again. And finally, if doing the company's books is not your thing, another business 101 on how to take the pain out of business. And that's thanks to Big Red Cloud.
De Facto, the revolutionary shaving oil, changing the face of shaving. For the smoothest shave of your life, just add water. No more lathering up or cleaning up afterward. Just add a few drops of water and you're ready to go. De Facto's blend of all natural oils hydrates and protects your skin. No more razor burns or irritation. A spa treatment for your face. Perfect for all skin types and lasts so much longer than traditional foams or gels. De Facto, a shaving revolution. Just add water. Available from selected pharmacies and from defactoshave.com.
Regular listeners know we like stories, warts and all. No overnight successes here, just a brutally honest business stories, something for us all to learn from. Amber Eyewear, a business started at the kitchen table in 2017, was eventually selling over €100,000 worth of so-called blue light eyewear every month, until it didn't. At one time, this two-person company was growing at 500% per annum. Then, post-COVID sales dropped by 90%. Ouch. Ouch and ouch. But, and this is the bit we like, the co-founder has got back into the ring for more with a new product called Everamber, and that is the madness that maketh a true entrepreneur. Dan Nugent, co-founder of Everamber, welcome to That Great Business Show.
Thank you for the wonderful intro, Conal.
Wonderful. Well, you're mad.
I'd be mad if I didn't do it.
Isn't that it?
Yeah.
We're all mad.
I'd drive myself mad if I didn't do something. And I thought about packing it in altogether, but you know, that would have made me more mad.
But it's even madder because you have a proper job as well. You are involved with Wayflower. What do you do with them?
I am involved in Wayflower. I'm currently leading the marketing team in Wayflower and have been doing so since February 2022.
Does that not keep you occupied?
That keeps me plenty occupied. That keeps me occupied from 9 until 5:30.
And then there is an Aurora and a Theo, and they're the two babies, and another young baby on the way. Like, you're a busy boy.
I'm a busy boy, but I'm lucky enough, you know, to be involved in an area that I really love. I've always been this Del Boy wheeler dealer type character, and I have a passion for marketing and selling things. And you know, I grew up with, you know, a PC and an old dial up in my house when I was young, and I've always been very
make the sound.
I heard it the other day. No, that wasn't it. It was nostalgia. So you know, between like marrying the two together, my love for kind of computers growing up and business in general, marketing, selling, it was always going one way into e-commerce. And I had a few forays into it before I landed on Amber Eyewear.
What else did you do?
Do you remember those hoverboard scooters?
Yes.
Started selling them online.
Okay.
Just when they came in.
Yeah.
And then thinking I was Richard Branson. But
I'll tell you a story.
I learned a lot there.
I'll tell you a story about Richard Branson. I am old enough to remember when Richard Branson started out and he had
a magazine.
No, well, it was even before that. There were bits of paper going around my school, classroom in school. A lovely guy called Nigel Dodd was his agent in school. And he'd go around and say, what albums do you want? And he'd send it off. Do you remember a thing called Post? He'd send it in the Post and the things would come back. Mm-hmm. That is how Mr. Richard Branson, who just collected another $600 million the other day, started making his zillions.
Great idea. Kind of how Netflix started as well.
Yeah. That's
but
that, correct,
they had
yeah.
to return it. I think you had to return
it. Well, but it was in the Post.
It was in the Post, yeah. Yeah.
So back to you.
So Netflix was in the Post.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, sorry,
Yeah. And then the people copped to that. Yeah, look, that's another story altogether. So you did your hoverboard. Did that work? Or what went wrong?
No, but it gave me that like eureka moment where I was like, okay, I'm going to find something to sell online and I'm going to make it really good.
And then you went into the eyewear, Amber Eyewear.
I mused on what I would sell for quite a long time. And I actually bought a pair of blue light glasses from Amazon to help me with my late night research until Sasha said one day, well, you're wearing those glasses all the time. Why don't we sell those?
And Sasha is AKA the co-founder, AKA your missus.
Yeah, missus, yeah.
And mother of?
Girlfriend at the time, recent missus since last year.
Oh, congratulations.
And mother of the 2, soon to be 3. Yeah, so.
You decided to go into the Amber Eyewear business and that was going gangbusters.
It was brilliant, like, to see something that you had such low expectations for take off. So suddenly within like a week or two of launch, we had tons of media attention, tons of influencer attention. Sold out of the first batch, albeit quite a small batch initially because we hardly were millionaires to put into loads of stock. But there was a buzz and you're getting messages from people who hadn't talked to in years going like, oh my God, I see what you're doing. This is amazing. Great support locally, great support nationally. The international orders started rolling in. I think we played it right. We invested the money in the right places to make it better. Snowball effect. That was investing in, you know, more styles, proper models, proper photography, proper web, like everything was just, we were just obsessed with just making it better and making it be able to benchmark it against like international brands. And it proved to be the right idea because eventually we got to a place where we were doing, as you mentioned, you know, 6 figures a month, which is wild from something that just started at your kitchen table, 2 people. Yeah. So it was really, really great time.
And those were the good times.
Those were the good times. Yeah.
And then what happened?
I've thought about this a lot and ultimately I think what really happened is, we ran out of headroom. We hit a ceiling, which is sometimes what can happen with a product like glasses, which, you know, you're going to buy one pair. You probably keep them for, you become attached to them. You keep them for a couple of pairs. It's not a monthly purchase. It's not a quarterly purchase. It's lucky enough if it's an annual purchase. So if you don't get out of Ireland soon enough and, you know, you're selling a particular niche type of glasses, which was blue light glasses. Little did I know at the time, and I didn't have the experience or foresight to see it, that eventually I would run, I was going to run out of space. So it got to the point during the pandemic where you're doing like 5,000-6,000 euro a day or more. And you know, great, this is going to last forever. And you just run out of customers and you just see it reflected in the sales. You know, things start opening again. People go back to normal. They're not so attached to the screen anymore. They don't have the need for the blue light glasses. So that addressable market goes down a little bit. While at the same time, you've fulfilled all the demand. And yeah, just overnight, pretty much, I could just sense the kind of the activity coming through the Shopify app. You know, we use Shopify. Was greatly depleted.
You used to love your phone going ding, ding.
I did. It was, that's my, what do you call it? That's my dopamine hit. I've since stopped because I don't get as many dopamine. It's just a reminder of how much quieter it is these days when it's not dinging all the time. But back then, yeah, my life was kind of like gamified by Shopify dings. You know, whether I was having a good day or a bad day, my mood would be affected by how many dings I heard. Probably not a healthy way to live your life. And I also had a really unhealthy addiction to live Google Analytics. I don't know if you've ever watched Google Live Analytics.
I have not.
But you can like watch how many people are currently on your website and what web pages they're moving to and from. And I would almost like, I was close to putting it on the TV and like cheering it when I would see them going to checkout thank you page, which is the post-purchase page. So luckily, Google updated Google Analytics recently and they've removed that feature. Thank God, because that, again, was very unhealthy. So,
I wonder why they removed it, though.
They updated it to a new, it's called Google Analytics 4. It's dreadful. Dreadful product, which is good because it keeps me off it.
well, not good for Google, mind you.
Yeah.
So this, a lot of the stuff you have learned with Wayflower.
Wayflower was post Amber Eyewear.
No, but I'm talking about, but you're on top of e-commerce in a huge way because of Wayflower.
Massively improved over the last 2 years, for sure. I think like when kind of young, inexperienced founders start an e-commerce business or any business that's kind of capital intensive that, you know, requires a lot of money up front, particularly with physical products, you know, you basically have all that stock that you have is just piles of cash just sitting waiting to be sold. And not having that cash limits your ability to put it elsewhere and grow it. I mean, it's a fundamental part of business or whatever. But when you're inexperienced, you don't really understand that. With Amber Eyewear, I was always kind of looking at revenue as kind of a vanity figure. You know, oh, this is brilliant. We've done X amount today. Never really paying attention to some creeping costs, creeping variable costs, creeping fixed costs, and ultimately low profit, whatever. So I'm not really making as much money as I thought I was.
I find that very interesting that you hadn't worked out that the only important part is the bottom line one, is the rest is eating everything else that's coming in.
Yeah, you'd be surprised how common that is.
Yeah,
well, I mean, I obviously had some, I had like a mental idea. I mean, I wasn't miles off, but I was never, when you're juggling so many plates, the absolute last thing that you want to do is sit down and pour over a spreadsheet of numbers, especially you just want to be out there, especially if you're like me, who's like a marketing person or a salesperson, you want to be creating stuff. And
Mark O'Dwyer of Big Red Cloud will kill me unless I say, you've got to talk to Mark.
Yes.
Because that's what they do. Oh. They'll take all of that away from you. Now back to your business, because you've decided to, first of all, the Amber Eyewear, is that still alive?
Amber Eyewear is still live for the next 5 days. We actually sent out an email to everybody who's ever bought a pair of glasses last night and announced this as an evolution, as a kind of like, we're not necessarily closing down, but we're evolving into something that I think is more appealing to the people we were selling to.
And the thinking is rather clever, but why didn't you just keep the Amber Eyewear going and just pivot or just move?
Honestly, like, I've gone through so much mental anguish with this over the last 2 years that I needed a fresh beginnings. I needed just kind of, let's tear it all down and build it back up again. It had caused me so much heartbreak over the last 2 to 3 years.
Well, in the last couple of years, or the last even months of those couple of years, how painful?
It was some pretty dark times. I would say, like, from February 2021, which is when that was the biggest month ever that we had. And, you know, I'm fully sure then that this is going to be it. We're going to be millionaires. Someone's Luxottica is going to come over and they're going to acquire us. You know, very, very naive thinking. Since then, compounding effect, just each month you would be seeing massive drops in business. And again, you know, that when I go back to that stock problem, all I had just purchased like huge amounts of stock, so I had no cash to save it. I also probably didn't have the experience to know what I needed to do to save it.
Do you not have a mentor?
It's difficult to find mentors that have a really profound understanding of e-commerce, I think.
I'm going to introduce you, as I told you before we came in here, to a young lady called Ashley MacDonald. And I'd say what Ashley doesn't know about e-commerce just couldn't be written, because she knows everything. Mm-hmm. And she was on episode, I'm going to go back, probably 184. Mm-hmm. Anybody who needs to know, wants to know about e-commerce, she's the lady. She is fantastic. Young Irish woman. Brilliant.
Yeah.
So back to...
So yeah, me and Sasha pretty much spent a year, I suppose, struggling to pay ourselves, you know, and then we had...
And this was your full income now?
Full income for both of us.
For both, yeah.
You know, we'd been through such a fun time. Like, just, we got to spend so much time with our young daughter because, you know, we were quite free with our time. But now that kind of the chickens were coming home to roost of putting all the eggs in that basket, I suppose. And we just introduced Theo to the world, who was only probably one when this was going on. So, you know, cost of living is a topical subject. So we had expensive rent to pay, expensive childcare costs to pay. And you see each month, you don't even know if you're going to be able to take a salary. Leaves you in quite a scary situation. So like financially, you know, that was hard. And it was obviously the reason why I decided to move to Wayflower. But
and Sasha to work with Amy Connolly, is that right?
That was a little bit later. Sasha tried to keep the boat afloat for a little while longer. Eventually moved to join Sculpted. But for like, you know, financially, I can live on small amounts. I'm not someone who needs a lot of money to survive. But
I think emotionally, you want to be a multimillionaire.
I mean, it'd be nice, but I think...
To what end? Why would you want it if you don't want money?
Oh, I know the answer to that. It's absolutely simple. It's time. 100% time.
You want your time back, is it?
The more money you have, the more time you have.
But the it's kind of contradictory. To get to that place, you have to use up all your time.
That's true. That is true. Yeah.
But yes, we're getting very philosophical. I might actually have a philosophy podcast eventually. We could be talking about deep things. We're going to run out of time unless we skip forward at a furious pace. Ever Amber, the thinking behind it is clever. I like it.
The thinking behind it is that, I actually had a eureka moment where I could see all the people that were buying our glasses and, you know, the blue light glasses, it's meant to help with your sleep and your screen time. And it's usually people who are very health conscious.
You know, that's debunked now, but we won't go down that.
It's not debunked. It's not debunked at all. A certain type are debunked. I think they debunked that it causes long-term eye damage, which I wouldn't even believe that. But in terms of the sleep, like the melatonin production, still very much a thing.
As I say, I could go down so many rabbit holes. Let's get on to... company.
Anyway, I look at that type of customer, and as I was saying, I ran out of headroom with Amber Eyewear. You know, you kind of have one product, and you're trying to force it on people, and you run out of a market to sell to. But then you realize, like, these people have hobbies too outside of this. Like, why aren't we impacting other parts of their life? They're health conscious. They very clearly were involved. Like, people that tagged us on Instagram always had a lot of exercise stuff or sea swimming and this type of stuff. So you're like, God, that's the type of person. We've got this product that they really like that fulfills a very small need in their life. Why can't we, you know, use our expertise in eyewear to produce stuff that helps them in other parts of their life? And that kind of concept came together of performance and recovery. So we were doing the recovery side, which is put your blue light glasses on before you go to sleep and have a sounder sleep, but not so much the performance side of things, which is, you know, the daytime stuff. I was close to packing it in, I'd say a year ago, and just, you know, shutting it all down. But I was like, it would be a real shame if I did that, given how far we'd come and the progress we'd previously made. So over the last year, we've really been like working hard on like rebranding the whole thing, but ultimately like working with manufacturers to produce products. So these would be cycling, running glasses specifically to start off with, but lots more stuff in the pipeline to kind of address a bit more sports. So we've produced a new range of sports sunglasses, nylon lenses, like extremely premium ones, getting incredible feedback so far from all the testers in the running community and the cycling community of Ireland. So yeah, hopefully that's clear.
And
performance and recovery eyewear.
At this stage, given what you've been through, you've done a proper market analysis and you've figured out that this is a vast market because you're obviously concentrating on Ireland, are you?
No, I'm definitely not concentrating on Ireland this time. But what I have learned, if you are going to concentrate in Ireland, you need to have an array of products. You can't just really have one product. And you see that like an apparel company can really survive in Ireland. A cosmetics company can really survive in Ireland because there's so much opportunity to cross-sell, you know, repeat sales.
And therein lies the whole secret of what you're trying to do now is runners, jockeys, I'm sure, lots of whatever they're into. And they're kind of space age looking things. They're kind of odd colors and stuff, but that's for a reason. Is there something about a red light or something?
The red lens glasses, no, they're the extra strong blue light glasses. They're the blue and green light blockers, which green is a wavelength of light.
And does that make you run faster or something?
No, these are for the red lens ones are for the evening time for sleep.
Yeah.
But when you're talking about the space age ones, I presume, you're talking about the kind of shield, like cycling shield ones with colored lenses. Yeah. I mean, I've always been a kind of proponent of kind of quirky colors in the eyewear. You know, you want people to look at your glasses and go like, Jesus, where'd you get those? And the only way you achieve that is with, you know, some exciting colorways.
Do you know what I do? I look at them and I say, he's weird.
Yeah, hopefully that doesn't happen.
And so you're launching this week, is it?
Monday.
Next.
Hopefully, if everything goes well, yes.
And then what does that mean? Do you just open up a website and let it rip or?
So if you're talking about kind of a launch strategy, I've invested an awful lot of money into initial inventory and product development and stuff, and that's mostly come personally. So when that happens, you really have to, you probably don't have enough money to go, you know, with this like giant national launch TV, et cetera. So over the last month, 2 months, we've been, you know, quietly kind of shooting a lot of photography and video, seeding out glasses to influential people within the space, not just to get feedback, but also for them to produce content and word of mouth, et cetera, et cetera. working on a website. We also have a huge like customer list of previous Amber customers, so they would all be getting a big blast at launch.
Working on a website? You haven't got it ready?
I haven't, but it's nearly ready. No, but it's very close.
If you launch and if you can't sell, surely that is, you're back to 101. Don't do that.
Don't worry about me. I'm fairly handy on the old Shopify side.
Okay.
We've already got the Amber website, which has a conversion rate of about 3.5%, which is quite good for e-commerce. Yeah.
Okay.
So, you know, it's a matter of updating that, I suppose. Keeping the same premise of like the structure of it, but just new photography, new video. I was actually in New York last week working for Wayflyer, but managed to squeeze in a little Ever Amber photo shoot. So there's some nice shots of the New York skyline that are going to be present on the website, which looks really, really nice. So I definitely think there's a gap in the market for something that's not Oakley, you know, something that's a little bit more native to Ireland, possibly a little bit more quirky, a little bit more exciting, possibly a lower price, but also very, very premium quality.
And you earlier on, you mentioned Luxottica, who own all of the big brands. Do they own Oakley as well?
I'm only
asking because like that firepower that Luxottica has, they literally own any brand.
Yeah, I think they do. However, like I have a strong belief that like direct consumer is not just about, you know, competing with these big brands that have the opportunity to, you know, giant resources. I think like a modern consumer who spends time on the internet, they can really like resonate with like the mission and the founder of a brand. It's not necessarily all about the product, but it's that brand that you can associate yourself with, you know? And I think we saw that with Amber. Like you could have got 30 euro ones from, you know, some brand that has the ability to sell them at a lower price.
Alibaba?
Yeah, but they would be crap. I'm trying to think of like companies that have the ability to sell them because they don't require as big a margin to operate. But I do think that, you know, people, there's so many boutique brands coming up in the US, and I get exposed to them all the time in Wayflyer, like that are massive inspirations. Like there's one called Bandit Running in the US, who are a big running brand in terms of like apparel, but huge. And they would have, you know, run clubs and a real like sense of community behind them. So it almost becomes like a religion or a cult, you know? I'm not saying I want to start a cult, but I do think that there's a
but
gap.
If you could, you might.
I do think there's a gap in the market for sure for an eyewear, a sports related eyewear brand in Ireland, because currently all that really exists is Oakley. And they're great, obviously, but, you know, it's a massive conglomerate.
Before I ask you the last question, I picked up that you believe that the Americans are just so far ahead of us on e-commerce. Mm. Tell our listeners one, two things that they should be doing in e-commerce that they're not doing. Just basic stuff that Ireland doesn't do well or should do better.
This is not a plug for Wayflyer whatsoever, but something that I have learned is that when you see growing demand at a high velocity, instead of being kind of scared to take it and putting all your money into it, do put all your money in it or else get money from somewhere else quickly.
Like Wayflyer.
And I've seen that time and time again where a company just for some reason, something clicks and they start to see rapid growth and they come to Wayflyer. Wayflyer sees their trajectory. Here's a load of cash, buy that stock you need, pump that advertising, and that breaks the glass ceiling for them and they just fly. Well, I'm not going to say all of them fly, but most of them will fly. You're not going to get money if it doesn't look like you're going to fly. So that would be one thing. Don't be scared of taking on debt to grow when the signs are clear that you are about to grow, because I didn't. And that was a huge mistake that I made. And secondly, always attempt to squeeze as much out of a consumer as you possibly can. And I mean that in a nice way.
I was going to say, I'm sure there's nicer words than squeeze.
Yeah, I don't mean that. I mean that. Like,
encourage them to join you, your cult.
Yeah. there's things, you know, like tactics that you can boost your average order value. Like when you're about to check out, it's like, would you like to add this hat for 20? I don't think brands do that type of stuff enough. And bundling and that type of stuff. Like I think those two things, don't be scared of taking on debt to grow your business. And also think of all you can do to maximize your average order value and your lifetime value.
Final question we ask everybody who comes onto the podcast, who would Dan Nugent hire in a heartbeat?
Do you prefer locally or
you may
in a perfect
choose
planet?
Whomsoever. It could be your Sasha, it could be whoever, but ideally, somebody who would be known to people.
I thought about this on the way in and I was going to say George Heaton, who's the founder of Represent, the clothing company, but a very kind of creative dude, very cool. I think he could really make the brand world class, but you know, that's a perfect world. Luckily, I would say someone called Jake Brown, who was the founder of Peblo, which was acquired by Wayflower. He's now doing something else. Jake's like very involved in the kind of influencer world, both nationally and internationally. And he had a TikTok house in LA before, but very good at like producing content and video and influencer social, very much on the pulse of that kind of world, which I'm not at all. So that would be quite complimentary to what I'm trying to do now.
Okay, that sounds interesting. All right, yeah. Best of luck with the new venture. And delighted that you got up off the floor and went to go have another beating. But hopefully it won't be a beating this time. Yep. And it's great to have you on, Dan Nugent. Thank you for joining us on That Great Business Show.
Thank you very much, Connor.
That Great Business Show.
De Facto, the revolutionary shaving oil, changing the face of shaving. For the smoothest shave of your life, just add water. No more lathering up or cleaning up afterward. Just add a few drops of water and you're ready to go. De Facto's blend of all natural oils hydrates and protects your skin. No more razor burns or irritation. A spa treatment for your face. Perfect for all skin types and lasts so much longer than traditional foams or gels. De Facto, a shaving revolution. Just add water. Available from selected pharmacies and from defactoshave.com.
That Great Business Show. Winner, highly commended award. Irish Podcast Awards.
My next guest is looking for 600, 1,000 euro to back the horses. Well, not in the way you might have thought. He's raising the money to keep bloodstock healthy. Trojan Track is an early stage company that has attracted a lot of interest as it's tackling a critical issue in the equine industry, undetected injuries in racehorses that often lead to what they call severe outcomes. And I think that is a euphemism. They're using AI to analyze horse movements, using just a camera and a tripod, providing early warnings for potential injuries, and also revolutionizing how trainers and owners manage horse welfare. And the man behind Trojan Track is biomedical engineer, Stephen O'Dwyer. Stephen, welcome to That Great Business Show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Stephen, you're from Mount Merion.
Yeah.
In South Dublin.
Yeah.
Not known for horses.
Not really, no.
But how did you end up? You've no horsey background at all.
No.
Unless it's your granddad who brought you to Fairy House.
Yeah.
How did you end up working or having a business in horses?
So when I was very young, I would have had an interest in the horses going up to the races with my granddad.
And hang on a second, you told me. Very young. You were 4 or 5 or 6. That's like you're going with your granddad because you love your granddad.
Yeah.
And he probably bought you some ice cream or something.
Chips it was actually, yeah. I always thought it was a mad sport. Like equine athletes, they were massive. They were like absolute specimens. So whenever I was at the races, I was always a bit in awe, but I never knew what was going on behind the scenes. And then when I got to college and we were doing a lot of work in biomedical engineering on, say, human movement, sports and stuff like that, I started thinking, look, I'll have a look into the equine industry. And a lot of my projects were focused on that. So we were looking at 3D printed horse shoes. We were looking at different kind of gates that you could put around a horse and track its movement. And nothing really came of it until my thesis, where I was doing markerless motion analysis on humans. So using a camera to do human movement without anything placed on the human. And I thought, oh, Jesus, this would be really useful for the horses. So from there, I dove into it straight after college and started trialing it, prototyping it, and here I am now.
Wow. That is a good story.
Yeah.
But you did the jump, because you went far too fast there.
Yeah.
Go back into the human one. What were you tracking? Is just how I raise my arm or
so
kick my leg?
In my thesis, what we were doing was the walk. So we'd have a point on the ankle, the knee, and the hip. And we were measuring people walking by the camera just to see how accurate this system was at detecting movement. We found out it was accurate. And I did a lot of research on what else it was being used in. So there was a big thing with Parkinson's patients that it could track the movement of the hand. It was around 3 or 5 hertz, the movement of the hand. And
3 or 5 hertz?
Hertz. So beats per minute, I believe.
You're the engineer.
Yeah, it's been a long time though. But so it was tracking kind of their symptoms as the Parkinson's either got worse or got better. So it was able to see the oscillations of the hand as it was moving. And I always thought it was a really interesting technology.
There's a company called Beats Medical that does some of that on a phone. Yep.
Yeah, yeah. So a lot of it's camera data, and that's why occupational therapists loved it, that they didn't need any special systems. And I thought, Jesus, the trainers would love this. They don't want to be bringing in big equipment into
the
yard.
But how did you know the trainers? I'll go back to this thing. You have no background in this.
No, to be honest, I presumed at the start. It's until I went up to a yard and saw their day-to-day and how busy they were and how much they really cared for the horses that I thought, okay, one of the staff could easily have a smartphone camera and do this recording, and it wouldn't be too much on their day-to-day to actually do a recording of a horse. Like, I know they get extensive x-rays and the vets check them out once a week, but if you could do this every day or every second day, you'd have that extra level of protection that you're not running a horse through a serious injury or sending them to a race with a serious injury, which would be exponentially worse.
So how does the system work? You just literally a camera.
Yeah.
And you just track the horse.
Yeah. So a camera or a smartphone camera is put on top of a tripod and the horse walks in a straight line perpendicularly to the camera. So it takes around 5 or 6 strides. We track 52 points on the horse during those strides. And then with the camera that we're using, it's 60 frames per second. This is all very technical. We can get biomechanical data then. So like joint velocities, angles, accelerations, stride lengths. So we could see all parts of the horse moving in those 5 or 6 strides. Whereas if you got a vet in to check it out, it'd trot up, trot back, walk up, walk back. The vet would be darting his eyes around different parts of the horse, trying to see which part isn't moving right. Whereas if you just do one walk with the camera, camera never lies. So we can pick up every single point.
And what is the IP in this? Do you own it or?
So initially we were using a software called Deep Lab Cut. It was developed in Harvard, I believe. But it was a bit slow for us. It wasn't really commercially viable. So we've since started building our own one. Now,
as you do.
Yeah. I don't know if that was a smart move, but we don't own the IP on it at the moment. But the way a neural network works is it requires so much training data. And we've got really good training data that we've trained it on, that we're not too worried about any competitors sneaking up and trying to take us over at this stage. It would be a bit of a monumental task to try kind of underpin us at the moment.
Because you've got all of this data.
Yeah.
But somebody else can build the same amount of data somewhere else.
Yeah, they could. They'd need to be on the yards recording twice a week for an extended period to get as many frames as we've got. It's possible, but we're hoping no one.
Well, can you not put it into a box and make it safe?
We can. We're especially looking at the US for a patent because that's where our largest market is. There's millions of horses in the US.
How many are there, you know? No, we're not talking about dray horses here. We're talking about proper bloodstock, isn't it?
Race horses, so thoroughbred horses, the Department of Agriculture estimates 800,000.
Okay.
Some studies say 250,000, some say 1.6 million, which is completely up in the air. It's because there's so many different jurisdictions in the US. Compare that to Ireland, where our race horses are probably only 16,000. You could see that we're sort of a small fish, but we've a massive name. So coming out of Ireland, going to the US with the Irish name, we're kind of the best in the world at horses. That's going to be our sort of marketing ploy to get over there.
And the 800,000, I mean, you have to go into each yard with your camera to measure the each animal.
No. So that's kind of the beauty of it, that anyone with a smartphone camera with the capabilities of the 60 frames per second and a 4K video can set it up on a tripod and walk their horse by the camera. And that'll be sent up to our servers. And we'll
and your servers
analysis.
Are in Ireland, are they?
Yeah, well, we're hosting them on AWS at the moment.
Okay, so somewhere in the world, somewhere. Yeah. Okay. And then that gives a feedback immediately?
Within around 5 minutes,
we can send a report back. Yeah. And that would tell them what? That horse is limping or lame out for this?
No two horses kind of walk the same. So we'd compare it to their previous recordings. So if you've been recording your horse for 3 weeks and suddenly it starts shortening one of its strides or the hip isn't as fluid as it used to be, we'd flag that. We'd have a red, amber or green flag for the trainer because again, they don't want to see a massive report. And they'll be able to then tell the vet saying, okay, this is pinpointed, this area of the horse. Can you check it out further? They might get an x-ray then. There could be a stress fracture or something. Or sometimes it could just be a bit stiff and it needs a week off. But any little helps with these race horses. They're so lucrative. they might only run a few times a year, that if they're missing a race from a small injury that could have been caught earlier, that's massive money.
And as you say, it is lucrative because or the animals themselves are so valuable.
Yeah.
Does that mean that you can charge premium rates?
We're planning on not being too premium. We're planning on doing €50 per horse per month. Now, the trainers might look at that and say, that is a big fee. But at the end of the day, it's the owner that's actually paying for that. And they're spending upwards of 20,000 a year on training fees. On top of that, they're probably paying around 500 to 1,000 on vet fees. So it's well, slots
600
in.
Quid is not good.
It slots in very nicely for them.
And where did you come up with that number?
Just conversations with trainers. We were looking
when you said 1,000 quid a week, they said no.
They laughed at me, yeah. But then looking at sport horses where the yards are smaller, the horses are still as valuable, we're looking at paying a bit more of a premium. And
what do you call a sports horse?
So they're the show jumpers and the eventers. Mm-hmm. They might only have 3 or 4 horses on their yard and they're shown a lot more attention. So we can kind of give them a more premium product, get more extensive reports and sort of return to play protocols in play there. And we could charge a bit more of a premium for that.
I'm guessing nobody has done anything like this.
There's one company that's targeting the vets. They're from Sweden. But generally...
But they're hardly measuring the vets in the way they walk, are they?
They're targeting the vets as customers. But what we've kind of found is the trainers generally ring the vet when they assume there's an injury. And generally when you assume there's an injury, there is an injury. And the company... they're just kind of solidifying that fact. They're not doing that sort of early stage prevention, which is what we're trying to do.
And setting it up in a tripod and all, it sounds easy enough, but it's clunky.
Yeah.
So you've obviously got some bigger and better and more automated ideas, have you?
Ideally, we'd still have the smartphone system, but it'd be remote recording. So everyone on the yard would have their smartphone linked to the one camera and they could just click record whenever they want and it could be in a more permanent fixture. For the moment, the trainers are happy enough with the camera and tripod because if they need to do a recording on another part of a yard, it's fairly easy to pick up a tripod and move, whereas it's actually harder to bring a horse maybe 50 metres down the road to the camera. So
yeah, they're big beasts, aren't they?
Yeah.
And obviously you've done a lot of work because you're backed by Enterprise Ireland and you had to find out the size of the market and you've told me about all of that. In money terms, what does it look like? Very healthy, very rosy?
For our current money situation or...
No, I'm talking about what your... What is it? The addressable market, the total addressable market. Isn't that what they call it?
It would be fairly big, yes. So
millions or millions. Hundreds of millions?
If we're to be as big as we hope to be, it's recurring revenue of over 60 million a year.
Recurring,
yeah. So and it's a subscription model.
Frequently, when companies are sold, it's on a big multiple of recurring income like that. That would make you very, very wealthy.
Hopefully, yeah.
No, I'm serious. Like a minimum would be 10 times, but I mean, it goes 30 times sometimes, doesn't it?
Yeah, but then also we're kind of taking into account that money isn't really everything for the technology we're building. There's like, I feel very passionately about the actual welfare of the horses. Like if we're making massive money and we can decrease the price and get it to the recreational horses or the sport horses that don't have big backing behind them, we'll do that. We kind of want every horse to use this.
Don't we just start crying?
Obviously, the money is a massive bonus, but like...
You're in business.
I know.
And you're looking to raise 600,000. If you tell people that you're going to drop the price and be nice to animals, that they're not going to love you.
I feel like if it was humans, I'd be happy to stick with the figure, but I just have this love for animals that if we could get everyone using it, again, the market would grow bigger if we go cheaper, but...
And is it, I mean, you are a data company or you will be a data company, and therefore the more data that goes in, the more accurate everything becomes and therefore a bit more clever product. Where else could you apply it?
So we're also looking at bloodstock analysis. So you imagine, say, a Tattersall's or a Goff's sale. There could be 500 horses being sold over the course of 2 days. If we could record every single one of those using our kind of data bank of previous horses, what their rating was on the racetrack, if they were likely to only run one race and be injured, there's a massive sort of study or analysis we can do on the yearlings of the bloodstock to say this horse could be rated 90 plus and he might actually run 6 times in his career. Whereas,
get away, really? You get down to that kind of granularity. Yeah?
So that's what people look for by eye. at all these sales. If you ever go to the sales, you see them staring at the horses. Yeah. And
but they're the real horse whisperers, exactly. Or the horse, whatever they are. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, we don't want to kind of take over from them, but if they have to look at 500 horses, they might miss one or they might be biased with one. We want to give them maybe more shortlists.
Isn't there another Irish company though, run by a woman who they do analysis on their DNA, isn't it? To tell you yeah. that it's going to win something.
Yeah. So they have the speed gene.
That's it.
Test.
Yes.
That was a spin out of UCD, I believe. So we're hoping to kind of be a step further from that, because that gives you short distance, middle distance, long distance, whereas we're kind of hoping to get short distance, middle distance, long distance, ground dependencies, rating, how many races they might run in. There's a lot of other variables that we can hopefully get rather than just A, B and C.
Don't laugh, but is it possible that you could apply this to human athletes?
Yes, but there are companies doing that at the moment.
Okay. So why could they not reverse it back into horses?
If I put a human into my system right now, it wouldn't know what's going on. If they put a horse into the system, it wouldn't know what's going on.
So you've got the data.
The training of the data. But there are Irish companies as well that are making massive moves. One in weightlifting, one in physiotherapy. So like this sort of technology, it's new. It was only in universities 2 or 3 years ago. And now we kind of start to being commercialized, and that's why we're hoping to be sort of first on the scene in the equine sphere.
Fabulous. Now, talk to me about the money. 600,000, but as I mentioned, Enterprise Ireland is going to give you some money.
Hopefully, yeah.
Yeah.
HBSU, yeah.
Yeah. And so, where's the rest going to come from?
Hopefully angels that sort of feel strongly about this. Like on paper, it's a very, very good business opportunity. The market's massive, and you wouldn't think it when you're thinking, oh, horses, there's only a few of them in Ireland, but worldwide, it's a massive market and it's a very lucrative market.
You mentioned that, what, now say 800,000 in the States.
Yeah.
Worldwide, where are the big places? I know Italy loves their horses. Spain loves their horses.
Yeah.
Obviously the UK.
Yeah.
Where else?
Japan. They're massive in the flat horses. Yeah. Australia as well. Yeah. South Africa, the Middle East. These are just race horses. Argentina has them. There's tiny jurisdictions that have them. But then the sport horses are sort of worldwide. They don't need as much space to train. So you've got Switzerland, the Nordic countries, again, Spain, Italy. I think Italy were the first country to recognize a horse officially as an athlete. So if we've got other countries now coming in on that, then they're going to have a lot more protections that need to be in place. And hopefully we can provide those protections.
That sounds vast. The whole thing sounds vast.
Yeah.
So therefore it's speed to market, is it?
Yes. And accuracy of technology. We don't want to be putting out a tech that's misdiagnosing or missing diagnoses. So we need to be 100% sure that we're catching every injury, because we don't want anything to slip through the cracks.
And that's where the money is going to go into, is it?
All tech development.
Meaning what? What do you spend it on?
We're hoping to build a team of 5 or 6 in back end and front end development. So we have an app at the moment, but it's fairly basic. We want to get easy to use app for the trainers. And then the back end, there's a lot of data labeling that has to go on.
What does that mean?
So we take a frame of a horse and have to manually click 52 points and then train that into the system.
Okay.
So I spent a whole summer doing that. I can't look at a horse again without seeing the points in my head. But there's a lot of that work needs to be going on. And then also we want to do sort of university studies as well to give us that piece of paper to back us up, especially in the US where we've got that massive market.
And where would you go in? Which university would you? Can you do that in UCD?
Could do it in UCD. The New York Racing Association was talking about doing trials with them through their link to universities. So probably ideally we'd want to be in the US doing the studies. I know I have an affinity to UCD, so I kind of want to do it there. But commercially, it's probably a better option to go over to New York and do them there.
You better give UCD a shout out, because they sent you to me. So which program were you on there?
I was on the Ag Tech program. So the way my industry works is if we're always very confused what thing to click. So are we sports tech? Are we ag tech? So are we AI? So we could do the ag tech program there. It was really beneficial.
You do know once upon a time AI was artificial insemination.
I know. People didn't know what I was saying originally when I said AI until I said artificial intelligence then.
How quickly will you get it up and running?
With investment, we're hoping 4 to 5 months.
And you are open for investment at the moment?
Yes.
So the old boxes are going around.
Yeah.
But an angel, you mentioned angels. It's a business where there are many wealthy people. So a person could come in and say, you know what? I'll give you all the money.
If they want to do that, then I'm happy to do it.
Dragon's Den.
Yeah.
Which would suit you best? Because you could go maybe, there's an awful lot of punters out there who might like a little dabble as well. So you could try crowdfunding or something.
I think the nature of our business crowdfunding would be really beneficial because it's sort of a marketing technique as well.
Yeah.
Wealthy individuals might have a horse with a certain trainer and they could tell the trainer and then there's a customer for us. Or they could be abroad. They could be in the US and know another trainer over there. Whereas if we just have one investor, then we're limited to whoever he has the horse, he or she has the horses with. But again, wherever the money's coming from, if they're interested in it, I'm happy.
If you leave aside your Enterprise Ireland money, you're raising 300,000 or 350.
350,
yeah. Like when you consider the price of a horse, a good horse, it's like literally feed, isn't it?
The
feed. So it shouldn't be a problem at all.
Hopefully not, no.
When will you know when you have it?
Could be a month, could be 3 months.
Are you in talks?
We're kind of in talks with a few people, now they're very early stage. They're more kind of feeling the technology, seeing, talking to their network to see, is it valid? So hopefully something good comes of that. But if anyone else wants to throw their hat in the ring and take their shot, then I'm happy to talk to them.
Of course you are. Because first of all, it's worldwide, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, I did ask you about the athletes.
Yeah.
Other applications outside of horses, have you got other applications in mind?
We were looking at bovine. So especially in Ireland and New Zealand, they do a scoring system for their breeding. And they measure a lot of the cow when they're doing that. So we could use the tech. It wouldn't be too hard to change for a cow. And then also the mega farms, I don't know the exact figure, but it's around 20% of their cows would go lame once a year. So lame is injured.
What is a mega farm?
So say the farms in Texas that they'd have thousands and thousands of cattle.
Okay. We had somebody on the podcast who were trialing in Rwanda. And 6,000 cattle on a farm there, yeah.
Yeah, so...
Small.
Small.
Size of a town here.
So it's hard for them, the farmer, to keep track of all their cows' movement. So if we could place a camera, say, after coming out of the shed or something like that, that tracks them and checks if they're injured as well, to flag them. There is a good few uses for it. People mentioned greyhounds to me, but I don't think that's a big enough market to actually be putting money into development. But yeah, there is a lot of ways to go with it.
Trojan track, where does the name come from?
I love the sound of it. The Trojan horse, the kind of, if they knew what was underlying in that Trojan horse, they wouldn't have let it in the gates. But also Trojan is kind of a word for strong. And I think horses are mega strong. So
how long did it take you to think that up? Was that over pints or somewhere? Or?
I actually did it during college, during one of my procrastination sessions.
That's what I said in the pub and the club or whatever they call it. Yeah. Final question we ask all of our guests, Stephen, is who would you hire in a heartbeat? You did get the email.
I
made sure of it.
You had him on actually the podcast a couple of weeks ago, PJ from Moonsist.
Yeah.
He honestly could sell this technology to a donkey farmer. He seems like such a good salesman and he seems so dedicated that he has all his numbers in a row. He has all his pipelines ready. And I think if he was selling the technology, then I wouldn't have to do anything. He'd get me worldwide within a month.
And you haven't met him yet. He's a big lad.
Oh, he is. Yeah, he's a lot bigger than me. Yeah.
Oh, do you have met him?
Yeah. He was on the AgTech program with me.
Okay. So. Yeah. Because he was playing, Aussie Rules or
over
something?
Over in Australia, yeah.
Yeah. So he's a big lad as well, yeah. So you're going to hire him, are you?
Hopefully if he... Well, Moonsist seems to be taking off, so I don't think he'll want to come work for me. But
the two combined, and anybody who doesn't know what Moonsist does, it sits in the cattle's stomach and tells you if it's sick or not. But you could be on the outside, he could be on the inside.
Potentially, yeah.
Trojan horse.
Yeah.
See that?
Yeah.
See what it did? Anyway, best of luck. Anybody who wants to find you will find you on...
LinkedIn, Stephen O'Dwyer. Or our website.
PH, Stephen with a PH.
PH, yeah. Or trojantrack.ie. All our contact details are there.
And you're willing to take anybody's money, yeah?
Anybody.
As long as they love horses.
Yeah.
Stephen, thank you so much for joining us on That Great Business Show. Gurv mina maagat.
It's all go, let Chrissy Gno on thatgreatbusinessshow.com.
That Great Business Show.
De facto, the revolutionary shaving oil, changing the face of shaving. For the smoothest shave of your life, just add water. No more lathering up or cleaning up afterward. Just add a few drops of water and you're ready to go. DeFacto's blend of all natural oils hydrates and protects your skin. No more razor burns or irritation. A spa treatment for your face. Perfect for all skin types and lasts so much longer than traditional foams or gels. DeFacto, a shaving revolution. Just add water. Available from selected pharmacies and from defactoshave.com.
Regular listeners will know that Big Red Cloud, Ireland's number one cloud accounting software for small business owners, are huge supporters of That Great Business Show, and we thank them very much for that. And speaking of thanks, we thank them for bringing us Business 101, a mini-series about setting up and growing your business. Liz Lavin is founder of Cisgate Pro, and she joins me in studio, along with Ian Hobbs, a sales manager at Big Red Cloud. Liz, Ian, thank you for joining me on That Great Business Show. Liz, Cisgate, S-I-S-G-A-T-E, Pro, where did you get the name?
I'll tell you, my last business that I had, which ended a few years back, I had a motto when I made profit to save, invest, share. So I would save a third, invest a third, and share out a third. So that's where it came
when
from.
You say share, would you give it to me now?
Oh, I'd give it to the staff. Yeah, yeah. I'd share out across the company. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So that was
so
my
that
thing.
Was the and, part. And that what's was the gate part?
Well, it stands for save, invest, share in your business in a gated community. So I seen an opportunity in the market to basically help SMEs, because I think they're the backbone. There's over 300,000 in Ireland at the moment.
We love them.
We love them. And look, I love big companies as well. I mean, they're all needed, but I think the SMEs hold the economy together.
And what do you do for them?
So I suppose you would call us a business support unit for SMEs. So I don't like to say we're consultative, because we actually do the work for them. So
and
we're
what
not
is
just
the work consul- that
so
you
the
do?
Work would be accountancy, HR, debt management, anything, basically take away the pain from the SME owner.
And I'm delighted that you, and I deliberately asked you that question, because once you said accountancy, because if you think about it, I couldn't get my head, well, I could, of course, get my head around this eventually, but Big Red Cloud, Ian's company,
yes, that's correct,
are
yeah.
in the same space.
They're in the same space,
so
yeah.
How do you live?
Well, I bumped into Big Red Cloud when I took over an accountancy practice. I bought out an accountancy practice down the country, and Big Red Cloud came up, because we would deal in all accountancy platforms, I suppose, but Big Red Cloud came up as, I like our support to be SMEs as well, for SMEs. I think if you have a supply chain for SMEs, they should be SMEs themselves, because they understand the pain that the SME owner is going through and they know how to support them. So Big Red Cloud jumped out at us, and Ian and the team were fantastic. So engaged, took on Big Red Cloud, and haven't looked back. So,
Ian, how did you come across them?
As you say, Liz, I suppose, took a referral or found us there when she bought a practice, and with that, got on the phone to us.
Because curiously, you do a lot of business with accountancy firms.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they refer people to you and you to them and...
Yeah, we would work with most of the firms across the country, helping their small, medium businesses with their accounting software.
And is there not a kind of a conflict there? Like, an accountancy firm presumably wants to do the books, bookkeeping, accounts, no?
No, well, I mean, every system or every firm needs somewhere to keep the books. So it's going to be the reports that layer through that. And that's where we come in. But also then sometimes you'll have a two-pronged approach where you might have a business owner who will manage the sales side of their business and the purchasing. And, you know, we have an app that you can have on your phone for your sales. Or again, for the purchasing, they could email the purchase in using the automated feature, the purchase importer, or PI as I like to call it. And then you might have the accountant that will be in the background where he could import the bank, he or she could import the bank, and then do the final accounts and give the management reports. So they need a system like that to help with it. But also, when a business owner has a system like ours, it helps. The accounting is very layered. I almost call it multi-level chess. And when you're doing one move, there's another two or three moves happening in the background. And if you don't have a system doing that for you or building those background reports, well, then at the end of it, you're going to struggle. And sometimes the costs, like every accountant that works with any SME, they know their finance and they know what they can charge on that basis. And sometimes it can become not profitable because they're out to help the businesses too. And they've got to put so many hours into it because they're getting these messy reports that it's not going to pay them either. Like there's one small little report at the end of our VAT report called an RTD. It's an annual return of trading report. And that builds out throughout the year. And if you haven't, I always say that little report at the end of that VAT document pays for the system. Because if you haven't got a system building that for you, it's going to cost you the price of the system to get an accountant to put all the numbers together and figure out where it came from.
That is the tax that comes around and whacks you in the back of the head, isn't it?
Yeah, it's one of our strongest points.
Consistently every 2 months, 6 months or yearly.
Yeah, you think you've taken in 100, but you haven't. It's less 23%.
Never use it for your cash flow. That's the key.
Exactly, yeah.
Keep it in a separate
account.
So
go back to your business. Who do you help? How many people do you help?
So
you told me that you're, is it in three jurisdictions, three countries, three counties?
No, it's all over the country actually. So we've clients now. We have over 400 clients. So
and where are you finding
for the length and breadth?
How do they find you?
I do it by acquisition. So obviously bought up an accountancy practice, then bought up a HR practice. Every service that we have by acquisition, I buy up the book of clients, and that's how I grow. So
and
that's
when you go out to buy, say, a HR practice, what are you looking for?
Well, particularly I'm looking for, again, somebody that can relate to the SME market because, you know, there are bigger practices out there, but the smaller practice will understand what the owner is going through. The SME owner loses the sleep at night, goes through the pain, understands that, you know, this business, you know, people say business is not personal, but to SMEs it is and to their owners. They're the ones that their lifestyle is affected. They're on the hook maybe to funding for personal guarantees. So it's really personal to them. So again, the supply chain and the kind of acquisition route is all about finding people that understand the business of SMEs.
And so how do you physically or literally do that? Say there's a HR practice that you see.
I usually put clients in that practice. So what I do is I might outsource a couple of clients.
Oh, cheeky.
To understand.
That's a cute one.
How,
I like that one.
I would have Whippy Gwent So I would make recommendations and then I would get the feedback and then I would look at something for acquisition then. I would consider, you know, are they the real service? It's a vetting. It's a way to vet that service. You know?
But I would say it again. It's like a little spy system.
It is like a little,
it?
Yeah, it is. It is like a little spy system, but in a legal way now.
Of course.
It's very
illegal here.
But no, it's a way, like we're very open about it. And myself and Ian have had these conversations as well. And I've had the conversations. I love the idea, the Save Invest Share in your business for SMEs is all about everybody doing business together. You know, it's about the supply chain is now doing business with our clients and vice versa. And we're acquiring. And it's to grow that book of clients and keep them in that community. So that's my aim, is to have the SMEs consistently talking to each other, you know, whatever industry they're in. And then we'll pick certain accountancy firms, HR firms, banks. We'll pick the one that's tailor-made to that SME because not every accountant suits a certain SME owner. You've got to have choice. So we'll do that as well. So we'll be quite, you know, we'll assign a business manager to each SME and we'll make sure that SME is catered for in every realm that we're creating service in.
And go back to the HR. When you're trying to buy a HR company like that, do you keep the management on, the owner on?
Yes. Because we've already maybe had the clients in there and, you know, we may have outsourced to them at some point and it's really the people we're after. And exactly with the clients, you know, we'll take some SMEs and they don't suit our business, even as a client. So we've got to make sure that our community is kind of like it's a community that's, I suppose, in a way suited to Ciscate. You know, it's exactly what it should be for Ciscate.
What are the big mistakes that you see the SME owners making?
I think a lot of the time an SME owner will either buy up the wrong software, take on the wrong supply chain, may overindulge on loans. You know, there's a lot of things that SME owners make mistakes on, but it's normally because they're reacting very quickly to their daily events. And that's what Ciscate is about. It's about creating a service where we can take away all that administration and that pain. And I do hear people talking about send the SME owner to do, you know, a course on accountancy, send them out training. Look, the SME owner of a restaurant doesn't have time. He wants to be training the chefs. He wants to be selling his product. Yeah. Another SME owner wants to be funeral directors. They want to be out there servicing their clients. They don't have time for that. I know I'd love to have them all trained and be able to, you know, understand Big Red Cloud and everything. But Ciscate is about basically making them, taking away the pain and letting them get back to doing what they do best. So go out, sell your product, sell your service. That's what keeps your business afloat.
That's what they love anyway.
And that's their passion.
Yeah.
Why would you take their passion away? It's like, you know, it's almost like having, you know, the child in front of you and you want to take away, you know, they want to draw something, you're trying to make them draw something else, you know, because the teacher said they should. So we don't do that. We say, no, you don't want to do the training, we get it. We'll take the pain, you go and sell your product or service and we'll support you.
And did I hear you saying that you also look after debt management?
We do everything, yeah.
What
we
does
do.
That mean?
So that can be like even in your accounts receivable, if they're struggling with debt management, trying to chase money, we'll find a source for that. We'll find a
You'll
source
find
with
a source for
yeah,
it.
We'll find a support
but you don't do
for
it yourself.
You know, we will do it. Yeah, we okay. will do it by either, you know, well, sometimes we'll outsource depending on how big the book is. And sometimes we'll use it with our own administration because we do have debt managers. We do have people in the realms that are debt managers.
How many people are you employing?
I mean, overall, with outsourcing and everything, I suppose we've, at the moment, I suppose we've grown to 45 to 50 people
bad.
Now. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah. Very soon you won't be an SME.
We won't be an SME. No, 250 is an SME, so we're all right. We're still in the safety net. But now there's other support units and stuff, but it's a real case of just taking away the pain. That's the key for me. Because I grew up in an SME business, you know, and I understand the loss of sleep at night and the pain that you go through. And I think trying to train the owner is great and everything, you'll do a certain amount of that, but you will not make them do that job. So there's no point. You need to let them back to their business. And that's the key.
Which they own and love.
Which they own and love and they want to move on with. And we will do debt management as well in relation to the likes of bank support. Finance companies, we'll find whatever is tailored.
Do you go in and fight the banks for them?
We do.
Are you good at it?
We are. We're very good at it. We even go in and, you know, we've had some that have had like the constant pain at the moment is the WRC investigations. You know, they're walking in on hospitality and they're creating all this pain for them. And it's not that I understand why they're doing it and to make them compliant. But we like to train them beforehand to be compliant or help them be compliant beforehand so that when, you know, contracts are in place, handbooks are in place, staff are in place, everything's looked after before that happens. So we just literally take away the pain. That's what we do.
That's one of the strap lines of Big Red Cloud as well. On your website, it says take away the pain.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. That's what it's there for.
Simple system.
Simple system, easy to use, and it's local, Irish, and you have full support. As I say, just get on the phone to us.
Like you'll talk to Ian. Will they talk to you?
They will talk to me, yeah, absolutely. I'll answer the phone. But as I say, and it's not, you know, who's your granny? What's your mother's maiden name? Your first pet? It's, hi Liz, how are you?
Yeah.
How's your day? How can we help? What's going on? And yeah, we're like, people think of tech companies, they just don't think of the human aspect. But that's the difference, I think. And that's how we win against our competitors all the time. It's just having that human touch where you can get on the phone, ask your questions and move on with your day.
But that's why our collaboration worked, right? So that's what I mean by supply chain. We work really well with Big Red Cloud because that's that personal touch. And I think that went missing for a while and now it's back and it's great. And there's supply chain out there that have that now. And I think that's where the SMEs belong.
Same question to you, Ian, about things that businesses should be doing. You must see so many businesses and you always say, you know what, that's the same mistake again, or what is the... an obvious something that businesses just keep doing.
Right, for me, a lot of the time, it's the systems, you know, that they're using that I would look at. I don't, you know, get to pry into people's businesses and what their acquisition is or their total pain points. I mainly get to see them and see what kind of systems they're using. As I say, a lot of the time, for various other reasons, based on marketing or other things, they'll buy a system that doesn't belong in the country, one of our competitors, and then they're left with something that doesn't actually manage their VAT, and they're back in the same problem as they always had in the beginning. But it's great because some other reason. And that's, to me, as I say, the problem I see all the time. And now we have to go and get all that data and try and now bring it back over and get it back to Big Red Cloud and start them where I feel they should have been from the start, obviously.
Of course you do. That's why you're here, isn't it?
But they're constantly oversold systems, right?
Yeah.
You know, they're
do you
oversold.
Find that?
Yes, yeah. Definitely. Yeah.
You need
SMEs
the super
are, you know, they the same people are the same supply chain is going in and selling to the SME what they're selling to the bigger company. And it's too complex. It doesn't suit the SME. And so that's what I think Big Red Cloud have done. They've managed to create a system that's simplified. And that's why people can identify in the SME market with it. So and it's the same for us. Our service is simplified. You have your accountancy, your HR, your debt management, your training. You know, do you need a loan? Does the owner need a new car? You know, what do they need? Just what do they need? And
when somebody approaches you, first of all, what's the process when they come to you?
So the process is we normally become their accountant because the accountant is always the person that any business owner will go to. And now I'm actually previously a financial controller myself. So by all means, I think accountants are brilliant. But I think that, you know, the accountant doesn't always have the time for the SME. You know, they're not, well, number one, they're not being paid enough to give that kind of business advice. They're not business advisors. They're accountants. They add up what happens at the end of the year. Here you go, sign here, you know, and you're compliant. So I think what we do is different in that we're business advisors. We're given that advisory. But you'll always go to the accountant. And the process for me is to become the accountant, become the tax agent. Leads on to HR, staff problems, training. I need a bank loan. I can't get a bank loan. I need a finance company. I need invoice discounting. You know, the wife's car broke down 10 times this week. How do I afford a new car? How do I get her a new car? So, you know, I need a mortgage. I need a commercial mortgage. I need a private mortgage. I need to revamp my insurance. Whatever it is.
I need a holiday.
I need a holiday. Yeah. Well, I do have a fantastic client actually in the Kildare region. Won't mention their name. And, you know, they used to close down their restaurants for 2 weeks of the year to be able to go on holidays. And during COVID, they opened another business. Imagine another restaurant during COVID. And now they take their 2 weeks holidays every single year without fail. Lovely couple, husband and wife. Fantastic. And
but do they remain open?
They remain open now. Yeah, okay. Because we got involved and we just, you know, they went from, you know, 3 to 4 staff to 32 staff now. Well, between all their restaurants.
Okay.
And they're fantastic. But like, they couldn't take a holiday. They're working 8 hours a week, you know, just and more down to just not being, I suppose, or having the advice or being as organized as they could have been and being oversold things that they didn't need, you know.
Well, you know what? That is the perfect end, because I was going to ask you to give me a big win. And we'll put that down as a big win.
Yeah.
And well done to them. And I hope they enjoy their holidays from now on.
Well, it's probably a first in Ireland, opening a restaurant in the middle of COVID.
And that is the voice of Liz Lavin of Sit There. We'll find you at sisgatepro.com. And the other voice belongs to Ian Hobbs, who's the sales manager at Big Red Cloud. Liz, Ian, thank you so much for joining us on That Great Business Show.
It's all go at Chrissy Gno on thatgreatbusinessshow.com.
That Great Business Show.
And that is it for episode 186 of That Great Business Show. Great business insights and inspiration. And as we said earlier, if your business finances are causing you sleepless nights, do have a chat with Big Red Cloud. A real person, possibly Ian Hobbs himself, will answer the phone and sort your problems, and they'll probably do it immediately. Also, regular listeners know that we're true believers in business mentors, so make sure to check out mentorswork.ie to unlock the full potential of your business. It's a fully government-funded mentoring program designed to fuel the growth of your business, no matter what sector or what size. And sign up for our email updates, and we will send you your own personal copy of the podcast at thatgreatbusinessshow.com. Do share us, do like us, and do give us 5-star reviews. It helps us hugely. Advertise with us on That Great Business Show to engage with our incredible audience of entrepreneurs, businesses, and investors. We record here at the Dublin South Podcast Studios, where today's studio engineer is the always lovely Alison O'Dwyer. A huge thanks to her and to the rest of the team here for their professionalism. Later, the dynamic duo of studio manager Peter Rice and post-production engineer Neil Horner ensure that we remain the world's best-sounding business podcast. So for me, Conal Moran, buichas to you all, and a slán tamall.